Welcome back to the Cricket Stats Scholar podcast. This is episode 4. The date today is 23 December 2020, and we're looking at India 36 all out and a recap of the first test. Just quickly, welcome back, Guy. Thanks for coming back, mate. Crazy stuff.
Very crazy stuff, mate. It's awesome to be back here, and what a time of year.
All right, well, what we'll do is I'll just jump straight into the crazy data that came from the first test, and then I'm going to pick your brain on, you know, what you make of it all. So
sounds good.
Let's get straight into it.
Let's get into it.
So this is India's lowest total in a completed innings. It's the fifth lowest total of all time in test history. The lowest total in an innings at Adelaide, and indeed it's the equal lowest total in Australia, tied with South Africa from 1932. The lowest test innings by any nation in 65 years, the second time in history that no batsman has made it to double figures in the innings. And back to South Africa, they did it first in England in 1932, rolled for 30. India lost 4 for 0 in the space of 29 balls to slide from 1 for 15 off 7.5. to 5 for 15 off 12.5. And then I'm just going to read you the scores from positions 1 through 11. It sounds like a telephone number. 4, 4, 9, 2, 0, 4, 0, 8, 4, 0, 4, 1. And finally, the whole innings lasted 128 balls or 21.2 overs, with a wicket falling every 2.1 overs on average. Now, that's a hell of a lot of information to absorb, but it paints a pretty clear picture. And I'd love for you to just give us your insights and opinion on what the hell happened and just what you make of it all.
Well, I don't know, Dane. That's my genuine answer. Like, it's like you said, it's the lowest score on Adelaide ever test innings. It's one of the best batting wickets in Australia, if not the world. And you've got the best batsman in the world, and you've got some of the best batters in the world. It's just, I don't know what to make of it. And the funny thing is that going into that morning, India were 1 for 9 with a lead of 70 or 80 odd, and people are thinking the Aussies are no chance. The day before, Australia were reeling, and they've ended up winning in 3 days. I don't think a bookies would have actually given you odds on that, or they would have said, literally, write your own ticket.
Oh, and I think you've hit the nail on the head. Like, the rapid nature of the turnaround was ridiculous. And every time a wicket fell for the first couple in that, especially in that period of 4 for 0, I was getting more and more excited up to a point. Then I was like, I don't know, I got disillusioned with it because I'm like, what the hell's going on here? This doesn't happen.
Well, it was funny, wasn't it? Because you could almost hear the commentators, like when it was like 4 wickets down, I think, and then it was 5 wickets, they started laughing and they were like, hold on, this is 5 for 15 for a minute. And the question I got for you, do you think it was horrendous batting or do you think the bowling was just unbelievable or a bit of both?
It's a great question. And I think that will ultimately define how people reflect upon this test. And I've got to say, the bowling looked pretty sensational to me. Most of the wickets, snicking off people like Pujara, Rahane, they were incredible deliveries. Probably Kohli was the only one that fell to a delivery that he probably didn't need to play. Yep. However, I'd be a bold character to remonstrate about telling Virat Kohli how to play, especially since he'd found some rhythm in the first innings. So I think largely it'll be reflected on as just a perfect storm of Australian bowling. However, I'll flip that question back to you. What do you make? Like, how do you process that?
Yeah, I'm very similar to you, mate, I think. I think when you've got 3 bowlers at a 6'5", the bowl over 140 kilometres an hour, all of them can swing it, all of them nip it around, and none of them give you a bad ball. And then the other thing is that you've got the world's greatest off-spinner in there, and he ties up an end, takes wickets, and it gives the other three a rest down the other end. But I think it was just the perfect storm as well. I think it was just, you look at their shots and look at the ball Rahane copped, and like Pujara. Like it was just one of them days of just phenomenal bowling. And I think India will look back and they'll kick themselves. I think Rahane running out Kohli in the first innings, Kohli would have probably gone on to get a massive 100 and it would have probably battered Australia out the game. But did you see some of the stuff that in India, what they were doing to, I think Rahane was getting threats and getting everything. That's how full on it was, him running Virat out.
Getting very passionate there, and also some very small minor sections of their passionate fandom angry with Kohli's expecting wife as well, which
yeah,
I hate to see that. But poor old Ajinkya Rahane, he's burnt Kohli at the stake, and then moments later he's burnt a review on an absolute plum, and then his test proceeded to get only worse from that. And I suppose he steps up as captain for the remainder of the series, and you know, he carries a little bit of a burden into the remainder of the series. So that, I don't know. I suppose before we get into your thoughts on the fallout and the process moving forward for India, and in a similar vein to the data I rattled off to begin with, I'm just going to feed some information out about Australia and their data. And once again, we'll have a chat, and I'd love your input on this because there's a lot of good stuff in here.
Yeah, sure.
All right, so Tim Payne, his first man of the match, 200 poles for Joshy Hazlewood. He's the 17th Aussie to reach that milestone. 150 poles for Pat Cummins, an equal third quickest Aussie to reach the milestone in terms of innings bowled, which is 59. So a bit over 2.5 wickets per innings, which is fantastic. Level with DK Lilly and Stewie McGill, and behind only leggy legends Warney and Clary Grimmett. Warney did it in 55 innings. Grimmett, a ridiculous 49, so averaging more than 3 poles per innings bowled. Cummo's test average of 21.26. puts him into ridiculous terrain. For bowlers who have taken 50 or more test wickets in the past 50 years, only Bumrah at 20.50 and Windy's legendary trio, Malcolm Marshall, 20.94, Joel Garner, 20.97, and my favourite bowler of all time, Sir Kirtley Ambrose, 20.99. Only those four individuals have better averages. And then Joshy Hazlewood's 5-for-8 is the third cheapest 5-for by an Aussie in tests, sitting behind Ernie Toshack's 5-for-2 in 1947 and Bert Ironmonger's 5-for-6 in 1932. So, you know, 70-plus years. Cummo's career strike rate of 46.3 is the lowest for any Aussie in 112 years. Australia's trio of pacers now have these figures in day nights. In fact, actually, we'll go to that next. So I'll swing it over to you. So a lot of numbers there and a lot of milestones. So what do you make of all this? Are we seeing the development and formation of something incredibly special here with this four-man attack?
Well, I think we are, Dane, actually. I think, firstly, going back to Tim Payne's man of the match, I've never seen him bat. I've watched him for a long time. I've never seen him bat that well. And what was really interesting is they asked him about his batting and he said he's been doing some work with Marnus and he's opened his stance up a little bit. He's watching the ball a little bit closer. And honestly, he looked like he was batting in a different game to anyone else out there, especially the Aussie batters. Like he was, if he didn't bat as well as he did, Australia would have been all out and they would have been 150 behind. Like it was, I think he deserves so much credit. And then, yeah, obviously you've got, and the scary thing about Josh Hazlewood is he'd probably be a bit flat that he went for 8 runs. Like, he got a nick over the slips for 4 and went for another one. Like, he could have had 5 for none. And then you've got Paddy Cummins there. Like, and that's what I just said before, is you got a bloke there that bowls 145. He literally never, ever bowls a bad ball. He swings it. He has the nip backer, which a lot of bowlers don't have. And the scary thing about them three is that they bowl on Australia every second test series. So could you imagine if every second test series they're playing in England or even New Zealand, where the wickets are a little bit more green, swings a little bit more, like every second test match, they're either bowling on the Gabba or bowling on Perth or bowling on Adelaide. And they've got figures like that. It just blows your mind, doesn't it?
That's an absolutely great point, to be honest. And I mean, back to Cummins, the fact that he's, you know, and this isn't to draw a direct parallel with where he'll end up, but he's in company, including Marshall, Garner, Ambrose. This is serious stuff.
Yeah, it's not a bad trio to be a part of, is it? And it just shows you as well is that you got Boomer in there and he's been phenomenal. So, and then also Paddy Cummins, he's a serious fielder and can bat too. So what doesn't he have? I think we've got to knight him soon.
100%. Million-dollar smile.
Yep.
Yeah, just an absolute top man. And Josh Hazlewood just moving through the gears beautifully. So I suppose I'll move on now into sort of day-night specifics and then recent form for the big paces. So Australia's trio of paces now have these figures in day-night tests. Starkey's played 8 tests, 46 poles at 18.9. Hazlewood's played 7 day-night tests, 32 wickets at 19.9. Gummo's played 5 of them, 26 wickets at 16.2. That's a grand total of 104 wickets in day-night tests at 18.5 runs per wicket. I don't know. How long is it going to be before, well, I suppose we were early movers on that, but that's going to be tough to ignore as an opposition captain and opposition side, surely.
Yeah, I've got a feeling that most oppositions that come over, they'll say to Australia, we don't want to play you in a day-night test. I'm surprised that India did. Like, I'm really, really am surprised because them records, like how on earth, and it makes sense, doesn't it, as well, is that you got 3 blokes, pink ball, it's soft during the day, but it swings around and nips around more at night. Good luck facing blokes that bowl over 140 that nip them around. Like, it's just, all you can say is it's a world-class attack and good luck trying to face it because I wouldn't have much fun doing that, I tell you that.
it's just mayhem, really. And then I'll move through these last few statistics and then we'll move on to, you know, the big ticket questions for India moving forward for this series and indeed beyond. So back to Cummins once more. And I mean, you know, look, we're fanboys, but who isn't these days? His last 13 tests, so 40% of his career, he's taken 70 wickets in 13 tests, so more than more than 5 wickets a test. 70 wickets at 17.6 runs a wicket, going at under 2.6 and over, and taking a wicket every 40.8 balls. Then we move to Josh Hazlewood. He moves to number 5 in the ICC test rankings, up from number 9. The first time in the top 5 since March 2018. Cummo's hold on the number 1 spot increased by 6 points to 910, with Stewie Broad in second with 845. And simply put, and as we move into the big questions, can India turn it around for Boxing Day with VK gone and Shami uncertain? But I suppose just quickly, on that Cummins stat in particular, 70 at 17.6, can he be stopped at the moment?
I don't think he can, mate. And that's a thing, is that we just touched upon it before, is that he doesn't bowl bad balls. He's not... And we all love Starkey, but at the same time, is that he probably, when he's on, he's probably the best bowler in the world. There's not many left armers above 150 that swing him back in, but he's not probably as consistent as Paddy Cummins. And when you're that good, like when you're bowling 145 and never missing the spot, it's just amazing because I was lucky enough to be around him when he was sort of going through his back injuries in Brisbane and. Yeah. He couldn't string 2 games together, let alone 13 test matches in a row. But look at him. Like he's now, his body's so resilient. He doesn't miss a spot. He knows his game. You can trust him with the bat. You trust him in the field. Like he's probably got to be the best overall player in the world at the moment, or the most valuable player in the world at the moment, surely.
Honestly, at test level, which is the pinnacle, I would... Off the top of my head, I couldn't think of anyone who would even come close because of the number of facets he's ticking off comfortably and also just the ridiculousness. Like, you know, this is the day of professional sport. So that Indian 11 probably worth about $250 million US dollars between them. You know,
plus got, more.
Yeah, well, exactly. Coley's probably wondered himself. The bats are incredible tech. The boundaries have ropes. You know, the pitches are generally quite homogenous and crafted with 5-day tests in mind for the financial aspect. It's not an era for the bowlers, and we saw that with Steyn before Cummins. So his numbers are ridiculous by any consideration, but with those factors, and like you pointed out excellently before, half his tests roughly are in Australia, which, you know, some of them are highways. This is serious stuff, isn't it? Like,
yep.
Yeah.
He's, yeah, mate, we will move on to the big questions, but I just can't see India getting close, and I'd love to hear what some of the guys think about it as well, because unfortunately it could be a test series like Sri Lanka last year, where it's almost the fourth and fifth test you start getting a little bit bored because Australia are dominating, and I think it could possibly go there again.
Yeah, the wheels could well fall off. Let's say they're wobbling at the moment. All right, so indeed we'll move into the big questions for India. So I touched on it before, but Shami's out now for the series, and which is really unfortunate. I really like Shami, and you never want to see anyone injured, so we wish him the speediest and best of recoveries. And obviously VK, the man, he's and the captain, he's gone home, and we wish him well with his new family exploits and all of that. But, you know, India's been knocked for 36 with VK around, with Shami around. They've lost heavily. Now they're both gone. Can they turn it around for Boxing Day, guy? Straight up.
I'm really, really looking forward to see the first day of the test match, because I think that they've got to come out with a bit of fire, don't they? They've got to come out with a little bit of make a statement. Rahane, I think he's going to captain. He's got to have a little bit of aggression about him, and I just think that first day is just going to sum up the whole series now. If Australia come out and dominate and put runs on the board or take early wickets or whatever, then I've got a feeling the test series is going to go a bit pear-shaped. But I wouldn't mind actually India coming out and just showing a little bit of fight and putting it back onto the Aussies. I'd love to see a really, really good boxing a test match. And I guess the question now is, Dane, like, who comes in for Virat? Who comes in for Shami? Because they're going to have to play big roles, both of them.
Well, that's right, and I must admit, for all of my nerdish endeavours, I don't know a great deal about the backup aces, and obviously Ishant Sharma's still unavailable, which is a crushing blow.
Yeah.
So I'm really not sure about, you know, who comes in for Shami. All I know is that they've got a hell of a lot to do in order to step up, and they're going to have to do it really quickly.
They had a few blokes in the India A game against Australia, and there's one, Siraj and Saini bowled, and Saini was actually quite good. I've got a feeling they'll play him. He's quite big. Mm-hmm. He's a little bit Ishant Sharma-ish. He bowls quite fast. He's quite aggressive. I think he'd be good in, but I've heard a lot of speculation that a lot of people are calling for Natarajan to come into the side as a left-arm option. Mm-hmm. So I'll be interested to see what quick they go with, but whatever quick they do go with, he's got to have a little bit of aggression, because he's probably going to be bowling on a flat dead wicket at the MCG. And then, yeah, the question is with VK is who comes in for him. And I've got a feeling it could be, I'd really, really like to see Shubman Gill get a chance. I think he's got that little bit of aggression that they probably need as well. And I keep coming back to aggression, because Australia are going to come out and they're going to be brutal, and they're not going to let anything up, and they're going to try and take this game away from him in the first 2 days, and that probably sums up the series. So that's why I just keep saying that this first sort of day is so critical for the Indians.
I totally agree. They've got to express themselves, and they've got to counterattack. They've got to show some mettle, and even if it's... even if there is a little bit of doubt behind the scenes, present a united front. This is what we are going to do. And that's not who we are. And even without Virat Kohli and Shami, champion performers and well set in their own, you know, careers and whatnot, regular members of the side, beaches of the side, we've moved on. and we're here to win the series. They forget even just competing. So quickly on Shubman Gill. So he played two games, both tour games, sorry. They're both first-class fixtures. Yep. Got a quacker to begin, then 29, then so that was the first match, and then 43 and 65 in the second. So he really sort of continued to improve. Also got 33 in the ODI, put on a pretty solid partnership with Coley. He's 21 years, 106 days old today, and has 23 first-class matches to his name. 2,270 runs at 68.8 with a strike rate of 74. So he's scoring at 4.4 and over, 7 tons, 11.50s. So basically half of his 38 innings have been converted into 50-plus. There's plenty of talent there, and I think it's time, surely. I know you're a big fan of him.
Yeah, I'm a big fan, mate. I think I really like his aggression. I think he comes off as a really, really good player. And I think in them, when I watched him in them India A games, is that he'd smash 40 or 50 off like 50 balls and then he'd get himself out by hitting one to cover or something. So he's obviously got to check that. And if he gets a start again, he's got to go big. And that's what the Aussies are so good at normally, is that they're brutal. Like you look at David Warner or someone like that, and when they get 100, they don't just get out, they get big 100. Steve Smith, big 100. So and that's what Virat did so well. So when he gets a start, he's got to go on. And I think the big one's going to be Rahane. I think, you know what, he's been in that side for a long time now. He's been vice captain for a long time. He's got the skipper duties. He's never really dominated out here or ever dominated against Australia like Coley and Piara have. So, yeah, I think he's a massive deal this test match. He's their batter. He's got to be the one that they anchor around. He's got to be the one that sees off the new ball and gets himself in. And to be fair to him, he copped a couple of good balls first innings, but he needs to step up this test match.
Spot on. Back in 2007, when I was rooming with a couple of mates, also cricket obsessives, we spotted Rahane on the domestic circuit in India because he was averaging, like Shubman Gill, 70. And his career is good. He's 66 tests in. 4,245 runs at 42.45, 11 test hundreds, 22.50s, strike rate of basically bang on 50. He's a very good player, but I think those numbers, as good as they are, they're under where I thought he might end up. What do you think about those numbers I've rattled off, the 42.5 average, 11 tons in 66 tests?
Yeah, I'm a bit surprised as well, mate, because, it's still a great average, but at the same time, he's playing a lot of test matches in India where the Indian batsmen are very good over there and there's always big scores and you probably get the fruits actually to play on some better wickets than you do probably in, say, England and New Zealand and even Australia in some aspects, just because sometimes in Australia you get a real quick and bouncy one. We're over there, you're normally getting yourself out, if anything. So I'm a little bit surprised by them numbers as well. And I think, like I said, I think he's got to be the one. He's got to be the man that takes it on himself, and I think it's going to go a long way to the way India go in this next test match.
Totally agree. There's an old saying that I like, cometh the hour, cometh the man, and it's really time for Rahane, isn't it? You know, he's got the C next to his name now, and big bad VK is on the plane home. Just quickly on Rahane, 14 tests against Australia, 864 runs at 36.
Yeah.
658 runs in 9 tests in Australia at 41. And then just quickly, versus Australia in India, 5 tests, 206 runs at 25.75. So his record in Australia is not bad. Anything north of 40 in Australia is not bad. But 117 innings, he's going to want to double that in the next test at least, isn't he?
Yep, exactly. He hasn't conquered Australia. He hasn't performed against Australia. And whether or not it's because of how good they are or because they're quite normally an arrogant team in your face, I'm not sure, but it'll be interesting to see how he goes.
Yeah, indeed. I think he can, and I'm sure he's incredibly focused and zen, but he can come off as a little bit more meek than, say, a Coley, which isn't difficult. Yeah. But I suppose one thing I want to draw your attention to before we move on from Rahane, his last 27 tests, which is over 40% of his career, 1,453 runs at 34.6, just 200s in 44 innings and three ducks. So
yeah, wow.
You know, so that's August 2017. So more than 3 years, he's been averaging 34.6.
Yeah, it's crazy that, isn't it? Just because of how high wraps you've got on him and all that sort of stuff. And normally batters sort of, as I get to sort of 26, 27, that's your peak of your career. So he should be, you would have thought in the last 2 or 3 years, he'd start to be getting into the peak of his career and start doing really well, experience and that. But he's obviously started like a house on fire and then just sort of slowed down the last 2 or 3 years.
He's 32, so he's got 3 years left. But like you said, he didn't have those meaty late 20s years that so many batsmen do. He's suffering as a result. Well, his numbers are, and yeah, he's got a lot to do. Moving on to someone down in the youth section, Prithvi Shaw. Now, a lot's been said and memed about him. So my question to you, some background on him. He's 21 years old, 21 years and 44 days old today, has 339 test runs at 42, strike rate of 86, so he's scoring at 5.2 and over in his five tests, and also has 2,263 first-class runs at 51 at a strike rate of 81 with 900, so he's scoring at 4.86 and over at first-class level, has hit plenty of tons and 50s, has that 50 average, has some good numbers at test level. But so what do they do with him, and how do you see him at this tender young age?
Oh, they've got to persist with him now, just because they brought him over for the India A stuff, and he's so young, he's done so well, you've got to persist with him. But I don't know if you picked it up, but if there's a better analyst than Ricky Ponting out there, I'd be very surprised. Because did you see he called how he's going to get dismissed that first innings, that ball? Incredible. And it's hard to do on video, but to be able to show people exactly what I'm talking about here. But the way that a lot of Aussies bat is they actually bat with their whole arms, and their pickup and their actual swing is done with their whole arms in a whole movement, where the Indians, the way that they swing their bat is they actually pick up their hands. So their bat actually gets near their head just by picking up their hands. And that's what Kohli does so well, and that's where they get their power from. And most of their players, like Kohli, they'll pick up their hands straight behind them, near their head. But what Prithvi Shaw does and what Ricky Ponting talks about is that when he actually picks up his hands, he picks them up out to cover. And what that does then is then your bat swing has to come back around from cover and has to become straight again. And so if you've got a bloke like Mitchell Starc bowling 145, swinging them back in, for your hands to push out to cover and then push back in and then try to get your bat angle straight, it's too long. So that's why he keeps getting knocked over. I don't know how he's going to come back from that, because he's a serious, serious player. I've watched him play a fair bit of white ball stuff now, and amazing player. But yeah, I don't know. I think you've got to persist with him, but he's almost just got to be resilient and go back to maybe trying to get his hands straighter or actually having a little bit of a lower back lift, because by the time that he's been bowled both innings, his foot is actually not on the ground yet. That's how quick the Aussies are. They're too quick for him at the moment.
Yeah, that's excellent insight here, folks. You're absolutely right. The foot in the air thing was incredible when it was pointed out. And and I like what you said, because you do not want to tinker with his aggressive approach as a batsman. You just need to tighten some of the loose nuts around his approach, particularly at this top level, isn't it? Like running around most domestic comps in the world, no matter where you are, you're not going to be facing one of Hazelwood, Cummins, Starc, let alone all three of them in a day-night test. So tough conditions, but yeah, and super talent, plenty to like. I hope he's getting support behind the scenes, because he is,
for sure.
You know, there's a lot of memes and stuff going around, but he is no joke. And I think you and I firmly agree on that.
Yeah, definitely, mate. I think as well, you've hit the nail on the head there, is that you'd rather support around him and not five coaches in his ear telling him this, telling him that, and then because he's in between test matches at the moment. What can you really change? So I just hope that he's getting the support and he's getting enough people around him telling him that he's good enough, because that's all he needs. He'll get through it. He's a good enough player.
You know, it's important at these times. He's a 21-year-old man, and he's just trying to make his way in life. And, you know, it's cool to have a meme now and then and a joke, but he's a top player, and I just hope that, he's getting the support behind the scenes, because he's a good kid as well. All right, well, we're 3 days out from Boxing Day, so it feels like just yesterday, and indeed it wasn't that long ago. How do they acknowledge this and move on from this, or what do they do, Guy, ahead of Boxing Day in order to just sort of try and shake this off as best they can, or can they?
Yeah, it's a good question, Dan. I think, like I said about the Prithvi thing, is that these blokes are world-class cricketers. I think there was a little bit of an aspect of not great batting, but that bowling was just world-class. If you're going to get balls like that, you're probably going to get out. So I think the biggest one is that you're in between test matches. They just need they all need support around them and tell them in the meetings that, you know what, boys, we are good enough. We back ourselves in. And that's what the Aussies are so good at, is that we grow up and we're a lot of times that the Aussies are told that back yourself in, because if you don't back yourself in, you've lost before you get out there. So there's a couple of things. Obviously, there's a couple of blokes moving into the team, but they've all got to be told that you're getting this opportunity because you're a world-class player, you're playing for India, you're putting on the badge, and go out there. And even if you have to get ugly runs, get ugly runs, and let's fight and let's make the first day as good as we possibly can and make a statement, because I think that's all they can do at the moment. What do you think?
Brilliant. I couldn't agree with that more. And for further insight, as a pro sportsman, so you've had many great days to get to the levels that you did, and indeed the successes you enjoyed. But when you and your team have been rolled, you know, badly rolled, much like India, probably didn't get knocked to 36, to be honest, but when you've been steamrolled like that, how did you and indeed the team used to mentally prepare and respond?
Yeah, it's a good question, mate. I think one of the best bits of advice I got early on in my career was, I think it was from Glenn Maxwell, and he said to me, you definitely have a lot more bad days than good days. And I remember going home that day and thinking, he's one of the best cricketers, one of the most dynamic cricketers in the world, and he has more bad days than good days. So can you imagine what I'm gonna do over my career? So that's why I said before about India just need to back themselves in, trust their abilities. They're there for a reason. And I think probably the one that stands out for me is a long time ago when I was fit and actually playing, is we played I think it was after Big Bash, we played a second 11 game against New South Wales, and they pretty much played their Shield team. We still played a good team with some known players, but they played like the Nevilles, Abbotts, Bollingers and stuff. And I think they beat us in 2 days, in a 4 day game. So we batted two innings. They knocked us over, I think, in early on the second day as well, I think. So that wasn't the greatest day, but I think you just come away from that and you understand that, what can I do better next time? And you kind of just need to back yourself in and get back out there, because the thing that I found is as soon as you start doubting yourself, you're pretty much out, or you're not going to bowl well before you even get onto the ground. So it's that comes back to that thing of confidence and a little bit of arrogance, but not too much. And that's why, as much as I don't admire Dave Warner's probably personality, if I'm honest, I don't think he's the nicest bloke, but you know what? He's probably one of the most confident people. Whenever you see him, he just backs himself in. He tells himself how good he is, doesn't he? And he just, he's intimidating, isn't he?
Absolutely. And I think he is quite a divisive character like that. But I think most people would go along with the fact that, he commands respect irrespective of what you make of him as a human. Absolutely spot on. I guess just to quickly wrap this one up, Joe Burns. So 51 not out.
Here we go.
All right. So he's thrown a spanner in the works, hasn't he? A little bit. I think Warner's out for Boxing Day.
He is, yeah. About Park.
So he presumably stays on at least for Boxing Day. So what happens What happens if he goes out and knocks a Boxing Day 100 and then Warner and Puck are fit for the third test?
It's a great question. I think for all what it's worth, great, good on him. He's been under pressure. He went out and got 50 not out innings, even albeit when the game was over. But you've got to get him. I don't know, mate. It's a great question. I've heard that Puck's going to be right for this test match. So I've got a feeling that, unfortunately, I've got a feeling what I think will happen is that Trav Head will get dropped. Matty Wade will go down to five and Puck will open with Joe Burns. That's personally what I think. So we'll see what happens. But yeah, I'm hearing at the moment that Will be fit, and I can't wait for that. It could be debut on his home ground, so could be an amazing game. And you know what? Well done, Joe Burns. Hopefully, he gets a couple more runs, and it's always a good thing when you're trying to fight for spots, isn't it? And you got heaps of blokes contesting for the one spot.
Yeah, absolutely. It's indicative of health. And look, you know, happy to see him turn the corner, and I hope it speaks to greater things in situations where the pressure is higher and the contribution is more demanding. All right, well, that's the first test. What an absolutely crazy game. So thanks so much as always, and we'll catch you on the next one.
Yeah, looking forward to it, mate. I'll speak to you soon.
Very good. Thanks a lot.